John Duffy, legendary name in bluegrass circles. Akira Otsuka, an absolute fan and good friend of John Duffy, has completed an album entitled Epilogue, a tribute to John Duffy, and it's all of these songs that impressed Akira over the years, and he gathered the greatest musicians over about a 15-year period, collected all these tunes together, released on Smithsonian Folkways. Akira is a fascinating guy. You may have heard of the legendary band the Bluegrass 45 from Japan. That was Akira's band. We're going to sample some tunes from the Epilogue Tribute to John Duffy album. You're also going to hear from the Bluegrass 45, and you'll hear from John Duffy throughout the program. In the second hour, you will hear from Akira Otsuka, who will discuss the Bluegrass 45, give you a little bit of perspective on that legendary band from Japan, and also his effort to finish this album and why he did it, and his wonderful connection with John Duffy.
Hi, this is Akira Otsuka of Bluegrass 45. You are listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. Don't touch the dial.
I am very, very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass for the first time. I'm very excited about this, Akira Otsuka.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Oh, this is a wonderful opportunity, and the opportunity that allows me to talk to you about so many good things is this amazing recording that I got a couple of weeks ago here for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass. The album is Epilogue, Tribute to John Duffy. It's on the Smithsonian Folkways label. We want to mention that because they deserve credit for many things, one of which we'll talk about as we progress through the album, but you were a member of, and probably every member of the listening audience, if they don't have personal memories, have seen footage of this amazing Japanese bluegrass band that came to America in the 70s, and the band was Bluegrass 45, and that were in that band that plays a part in your connection with John Duffy and how this incredible tribute album came together. And I love the story. If you can fill us in a little bit on that, I love it. I know it, but maybe some people don't.
Okay. Bluegrass 45 was formed in 1967 at a place called Low City, a small coffee shop in Kobe, Japan. And it consisted of me and my brother. I was playing mainly, my brother, guitar player, Josh, and Watanabe brothers, Toshio and Sub on bass and banjo. Two half Japanese, half Chinese boys, Leo on the fiddle and Lee on the guitar. And we were just learning bluegrass, and we used to get together at this little city and started playing. And we were discovered by Dick Freeland, who used to own Rebel Records. In 1970, and he asked us to tour the States in 1971, so we did that, and we came back in 72. And the first night we arrived in D.C., Dick said, "Oh, John and Nancy Duffy are coming tonight for dinner." We are like, "Oh, sure, you are kidding. But
why was that significant to you and the band being from Japan? John Duffy and his wife are coming. What, so immediately, you can't believe it's happening. But why is that?
Okay, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Our banjo player really liked Earl Scruggs. He's a banjo player, but I loved Country Gentleman. First album I heard Country Gentleman was probably 1963 or 64. I had been listening to Bill Monroe, but when I heard John, it's like, this makes sense. You know, it made sense to me. Because maybe because his background, it was not too country. And it was like a city sound. And it appealed to me. I learned everything John recorded. And when we saw him at Dick Freeland's house in 71, probably we surprised him because we knew every song that he recorded. And we, you know, if he says "On Diana's Quilting Party," even though banjo player Sub was into Earl, he still knew how Eddie Adcock started the song.
That's right.
And, you know, I would take a break just like John did on his recording. And my brother would sing lead vocal, and, you know, John would jump in on the chorus, and it was a wonderful experience for us.
Must have been
but
magic.
Hopefully it was for John also.
Yeah, I think it must have been.
John Duffy was my hero.
Oh, good.
When I was in Japan, and when I met him, you know, he turned out to be one of the nicest people yet.
Yeah, isn't that something? And for the people that hadn't seen you then, this was the thing about Bluegrass 45 that was always stunning. You guys were absolutely schooled. You knew what you were doing. And during the songs, I don't know if anyone knew where you were from if they could sit in the back. But I don't know that you were that versed in speaking English. Were you that conversant in English at this first time that you met John?
Not at all. My brother had been in the States before that, so he spoke for us, and he was very good. But even that, he was still stumbling, and we were having a hard time communicating with people. But at least we knew kind of the lyrics. It was not pronounced right, but we knew all the chorus and all that.
Yeah. Well, you had the words down. You would pronounce them phonetically, what we would call phonetically. You did the sounds that fit, and the timing was exactly as if you were understanding all the words that you were singing. And I remember it so well. I thought, and then when you would start speaking, I said, wait a minute, they don't speak English, and they're singing dead on like they could be from the mountains or from Kentucky or West Virginia.
Well, I have been living in the States for 40-some years now, so... You know, I get a little bit better.
Well, sure. So, and then this, before we leave Japan and come back here and you meet John Duffy, how does a band, I will guarantee you, and there was a bit of an exchange that where bluegrass started going to Japan. There were famous concerts, and the biggest bands in America would go to Japan, but I think when Bluegrass 45 came here, that hadn't yet started, I don't believe. You remember what I'm talking about, where all of a sudden Crow and Flat, everybody was going to Japan because the audience was there. What was it about bluegrass that caught you, caught you and the audience of Japan in general to the music, to open them up to the music?
First real national act, bluegrass act, that we saw was Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs in 1968.
Okay.
And before that, we saw like Mike Seeger come over, a lot of country acts like Hank Snow. Oh, Hank Snow, I saw him in like 66 maybe. We were very, very disappointed because he didn't bring Chubby Wise.
Ooh.
We went to see Chubby Wise, but
yeah,
he was
sure.
Not there. Hank Snow had this young kid. He was really good, and his name was Buddy Spiker.
Oh, yeah.
And he was very young. Anyway, we saw Flatland Scruggs in 68. In 1970, Ralph Stanley came.
Oh.
And, no, I take it back. That was 1971. It was arranged by Dick Freeland, who came to Japan the previous year and saw us. And he knew the market better because his company, Rebel, had a contract with Japanese recording company, and Japanese recording company was putting out Rebel records. And they knew Ralph would sell out all the shows. And we were so thrilled to see Ralph. And I was a big Stanley Brothers fan also. So I even went to Tokyo. I'm from Kobe, mm-hmm. but I even went to see Tokyo to see their first show.
The crowd response. I mean, these were not partially attended. These were packed. These were packed concerts, weren't they? As I recall.
Yes, I mean, you listen to J.D. Crow live in Japan, mm-hmm. some gentlemen live in Japan. I guess gentlemen was there in 72. Crow was a couple of years later, 74, something with Ricky Skaggs, Tony Rice, Jerry Douglas, and Bill Monroe there.
Mm-hmm.
It was always packed. The bluegrass population was really big, and they would fill out 2,000-seat halls.
Mm.
And it is not like that today. It has shrunk a lot. But back then, I mean, we were starved for, you know, real thing, because it was before internet and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody knew where to find it. But when they came, you know, we went to see.
It's amazing. It's amazing the attraction that it had. It's amazing to me the attraction of bluegrass had on a band that became Bluegrass 45, and the fact that you were able to come here to America and make the connections that you did. And after many years, of course, by the time you start this record, the epilogue, a tribute to John Duffy, which is on Smithsonian Folkways, you had gotten to know John Duffy very well.
Yes, I met him, like I said, in 71, and I moved over here to the States in 73, and by then John had the Solemn Scene going, and I used to go see them at the Red Fox Inn in Bethesda, Maryland, and then they moved to Birchmere in Alexandria. I was there just about every week. And when Solemn Scene went to Japan in 85 and 91, I went with them, because John said, I'm not going, you know, if you don't go.
If for the audience listening, Country Gentleman existed for a while. It was John Duffy and different band members, Eddie Adcock and Bill Emerson, even before that. And then they kind of broke up for a while, and then John recreated. And most people know this, but I just want to fill them in case they're new to Unreal Bluegrass or to listening to Akira Otsuka about his journeys. Then Seldom Steam came about, which had a whole different sound. Still kind of stationed in that Washington, D.C., East Coast area, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. John was so influential for spreading bluegrass into city. His audience had farmers from outskirts of D.C. to lawyers on K Street. And he appealed to wider audience, maybe because he was aiming at more, with the Country Gentlemen, they were trying to appeal to folk audience,
mm-hmm.
you know, 60s, during the folk Utini days. And then when the Solemn Scene started in 71, they just started playing once a year, once a month. All of them had a decent day job. So it was a weekly poker game, and they were having fun, and when you're having fun, good music came out.
That's right. And the Seldom Scene, as you know, they named them that because John didn't expect to be seen that often.
Right, exactly.
And the other thing they did, too, and maybe this attracted this audience you're talking about, the songs they sampled, were a lot of them were sort of modern. I mean, If I Were a Carpenter, which is on this collection from the epilogue attributed to John Duffy, but so many things they pulled from and brought into the bluegrass world didn't start out there, but they became now what we look at as traditional bluegrass tunes because the Seldom Scene, and Duffy brought them into our listening.
Yes. I mean, John Prine's Paradise, Steve Goodman's City of New Orleans, you know.
Yeah.
These were new to bluegrass. Today it's a standard now.
Exactly.
I mean, but it was unique. Also, Gentlemen did the same thing.
You're right.
Singing Girl from the North Country by Bob Dylan, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue.
You know? And the one that still blows my mind, because I've talked to Bill Emerson about this, he heard a song on the radio by a band named Manfred Mann, and it was Fox on the Run, and he recorded it, and they decided they would, and Jesus Pete, there you go. So, yeah, they had the Fox on the Run. Most people don't even know that it was a rock and roll tune by Manfred Mann.
That's right.
By the way, the album, which is on Smithsonian Folkways, I want to keep mentioning this because it's an amazing collection, and you should get credit for all the effort. Epilogue, a tribute to John Duffy on Smithsonian Folkways. One of the things we talked about right before we went on the air was this incredible collection of books, the book of liner notes and information, almost 44 pages of information of different writers, different perspective. Yours your relationship with Duffy, everybody on the album, where the tunes came from originally, and if for nothing else, the song, the music is great, but you can just sit, we were talking before we went on the air, that it's kind of like when you had the old album, you had a vinyl, and you could read all the back of it, you learn everything from inside this booklet, and it's a wonderful collection of music and writing, and it's just, I congratulate you for making sure this came about this way.
Thank you very, very much. You know, I'm lucky that Folkways was willing to do that. And also, I'm lucky that John's daughter, Ginger, helped me with pictures. You know, she had these
collections. Oh, yeah, they're wonderful pictures.
Great pictures, yes. Yeah. And Smithsonian is willing to put this picture full size, CD size, and instead of tiny one inch square. So you can see the details of the pictures, and I'm so grateful that Smithsonian Folkways did that.
It's an absolutely gorgeous package of words and music. It really is. And photographs. I forgot about that. I'm glad you mentioned that. There's great photographs up here of John and different things. And the mandolin. I want to talk about your mandolin a little bit, but let's get to into the story. And I believe, as I read the notes, it was around 2002 when the idea behind this album came together. Can you fill us in on that a little bit?
Sure. My co-producer, and he's an engineer and long-time friend, Ronnie Freeland. He is a son of Dick Freeland. When I came to the States, I didn't have any friends, and Ronnie was 12, 13 years old, and I used to take him out to Red Fox Inn to sell them seeing. I used to take him out to Saldo to see New York Revival. I used to take him to Carlton Haynes festivals. Later on, he got interested in recording engineer. So he studied, and he turned out to be a wonderful engineer. On the way back from IBMA in Louisville in 2002, Ronnie says, "Hey, we have to do this." I'm like, "What are you talking about? We have to do this John Duffy tribute album." I'm like, "That's a great idea." And where he came up with that idea, I don't know. But he's the one who said it. So we started recording at the end of 2002, and we recorded a lot in 03 and 04, and almost finished all the recording in 05.
There are, and I believe I read, and I did not count them all to verify, but there are dozens and dozens and dozens of great instruments, great instruments and great musicians and singers on the album, but at some point you mentioned 53 musicians over three or four states that you traveled. And it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, everybody was willing as soon as you contacted them to participate.
It was the easiest. I think I had the easiest producer job ever because whenever I went to somebody and said, "Hey, would you record with us? We are doing a John Duffy tribute." And they would go, "Oh, sure." That shows that everybody loved John.
And there's almost so many names. I love to give credit to people that are on. And people can read this. And I would implore them to when they get the CD, pull out this very thick, hefty booklet of information and read who's playing what on each and the origin of each tune and what original recording was. But just for a few, there's of course Dudley Connell, Sam Bush, Bela, Amanda Smith, Steve Gulley, Ronnie Bowman, Jonathan Edwards, Don Rigsby, Lou Reed, Fred Travers, who plays a part in one of the original bands, and Eddie Adcock. And you, of course, but I mean, if the names just go on, it would take 2 minutes to read all the people that participate. And it's amazing because they all blend in. It seems to me that everybody was willing to, if they were going to sing background or harmony or background, everybody seemed to be willing, correct me if I'm wrong, to take their spot in order for the music to be great. In other words, all these great stars that everybody would recognize as stars were willing to subjugate themselves, if I can make up a word, sort of, to the sound of the music.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was very sweet of them to do that. You know, not up in front, but taking the back seat
yeah.
and supporting
yeah.
the music.
How did you get, so there's 16 tunes, one, the last one is you wrote, First Tier, which is an absolutely gorgeous tune. How do you pare down of all the music available that John Duffy stamped his spirit onto? How do you pare down to 16 songs?
Well, Ronnie had been listening to John Duffy since, you know, before he turned 10 years old. And I've been listening to John since like 63, 64. So I knew everything John had recorded with the gentleman or Seldom Sing, or even when he did the guest appearance with Cliff Orton and Bill Emerson. And we just wrote down all the songs that we wanted to do. And we argued and argued and argued. And, you know, we started recording, and then we put down some more. And some song, a few songs we worked on didn't work out for a few different reasons. And we just took them out, and this is what we got, 16 tunes.
I did not want to start doing this, but now I'm going to do it again. Tim O'Brien I left out. John Starling I left out when I just kind of ran through the bunch. There's so many of them. They're just, and Lou Reed, I don't know if I mentioned him before, but there's so many great, and it seems like, am I right, they all come together on Christmas Time Back Home? Is that like one big, is everybody together on that one? And you had to do that one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing that nobody else had recorded it since John recorded it. Mm. I mean, that tune gets so much airplay around Christmas time.
Yeah.
It's like, why nobody had done it? And we are lucky that, you know, everybody left it out.
Was there any dispute of it? Anyone who had any decision-making authority or input into the songs, was there any dispute that you had to do bringing Mary home?
We were looking for something for John Starling. And Ronnie recorded the concert back in 98, John Duffy tribute concert held at the Birchmere. And we listened to Bring Mary Home, and it was just wonderful. So we asked John Starling, hey, John, can we use this? He's like, oh, sure. Mm-hmm. So we were so delighted.
Oh, you have to have that one in the collection.
Because it was Duffy's, you know, top 30 or whatever, biggest number he had. And having John Starling singing it, and with Eddie Adcock singing baritone and Lou Reed singing tenor, it's just a wonderful, wonderful track.
And, Kira, you mentioned top 30, or you try to put a number to that Bringing Mary Home. There were so many songs that John had a hand in that were actually chartable, that you could find on the charts of some kind. It wasn't like, you know, he was making great music that we knew about, but his songs were popular enough to get on different charts and get enough exposure for not just for his bands, but also for the genre of bluegrass. He was, you know, you could find his stuff on the charts if you looked for it.
Mm-hmm. I found something new a couple of days ago. There's a Bob Dylan country style or something like that. I had never seen it. It's a CD. And with a lot of people, Johnny Cash and I cannot remember, all these big names. And first song is Bob Dylan with Earl Scruggs doing Nashville Skyline Rag. Mm. Second song is Girl from the North Country by the Consumer. Mm. And then followed by Roseanne Cash or I just can't remember. But I couldn't believe, I just found it a couple of days ago, and the gentleman's version is, you know, track two on the CD. It was interesting.
There are, well, and Girl from the North Country is on this album, the epilogue tribute to John Duffy, and we've mentioned it, If I Were a Carpenter, I think, earlier in the discussion, and of course, Bringing Mary Home, the Christmas Time Back Home. You also do Chim Chim Cheree. There's a couple of musicals in here, and Sam Bush does Sunrise. So you cover everything because you have a great deal of respect. And John Duffy's voice was so monumental and his ability to bring these bands together. But he's also a very good mandolin player, which you appreciate. I want you to talk a little bit about his playing, how it affected you, and then you have this wonderful gift of a mandolin from John Duffy.
Like I said, Bill Monroe's mandolin playing was hard for me to get into. And when I heard Duffy for the first time, it's like, this makes sense. You know, the way he put seventh chord or ninth chord to go to the next chord and all that. It just made sense to me. And after John passed away, I got his Gibson F12 mandolin. Oh, let me go back a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
1969, as John was leaving the country gentleman, his Gibson mandolin got stolen. So when he started to sell them scene, he didn't have a mandolin, and he decided to build his own. Because he could, he was working as a guitar repair person, or luthier, if you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew how to fix instruments, and he decided to build a mandolin of his own. And he is such a unique person. He came up with this design that is so bizarre. And it looks like a duck.
It does. And for the people out there listening, there's two points on it. And one point, if you turned it sideways and describe why it looks like a duck, and he actually called it a duck. But as a mandolin player, when you first saw it, you noticed what was different about it than the other one you'd seen.
He built that and started playing it with the Solemn Scene in 71. And he built me a new one, a second one for me. I mean, he built only two, and I had the second one. And where was I? Oh, Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
I got his Gibson F12 after he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I thought it would be great to have mandolin players play this mandolin on the tribute album.
Mm-hmm.
So David Grisman played it. Mark McGlashan, wonderful mandolin player from Maryland. Wayne Benson played it. Lou Reed played it on Christmas time back home. You know, I thought it would be nice to wave a hand at John saying, hey, thanks, John.
Yeah. Very nice. And you've mentioned more musicians. I knew I couldn't even try. I shouldn't try. Bruce Molsky, one of my favorite fiddle players, is on here. I just love Bruce, what everything he does.
Usually he plays fiddle, but he's a wonderful guitar player also, and he played guitar on this. Another person that is kind of strange to appear on an album like this is Nils Lofgren, guitar player of Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays dobro. He had never played dobro, but Ronnie said, Bruce was Ronnie's client. Ronnie helped. Did I say Bruce? I'm confused.
You said Ronnie Bruce. Freeland. We were talking about Nils Lofgren, was it?
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Ronnie helped Nils Lofgren's recording. And Ronnie said, hey, Nils, would you play on this album? And Nils said, yeah. So we got him a dobro, but Nils played it like a guitar.
Okay.
Not the slide.
Okay. And was it a round neck or a square neck? Had to be
round neck.
Round neck, yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, he had a career before he joined Bruce's band. Nils has been around a long, long time in rock and roll.
Yes. Green or something like that. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
He had a band in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
area. Anyway, that's a song that Amanda Smith sings, if that's the way you feel. And Amanda sung it so well and so sweet. And Nils Dobro gives a little sharp edge to the song. And Ronnie, I liked the contrast between the two.
How much in the production, and by that I mean the decision making, was yours versus Ronnie, or in other words, when you decide I want to mix this in, or you have this opportunity to use Nils on a dobro that he'd never played, how much of the decision? I know it was a long time over the production, but was this something that you felt that you needed to be hands on because it was a tribute to John Duffy? But yes, by a lot of people, yes, but it was sort of your tribute to John Duffy using all these other great musicians.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie and I discussed many hours. Who should do this, who should sing this. But on the other hand, we had such a great time. It was like coming up with, what do you call it, a fantasy baseball team.
Okay. I like you, that. Well, that, you did have one of those, that's for sure.
We pick a song, say if that's the way you feel. Okay, we want to do this. Okay, who should sing this? Well, John sung in C, and we want to keep it. Probably we should have a female singer. Oh, let's use Amanda. Oh, yeah, that'll be great. Who do you want to use on the guitar? Of course, Kenny has to play on that one, Kenny Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Man Lynn, who should we get? Adam Steffi. You know, he's really tasteful.
Yes.
And bass, Jason Moore, who used to play with Mountain Heart. He's with Sideline now. He is... When we have Kenny and Jason together, they click together. They are so tight. We have done this. I mean, Ronnie recorded Kenny Smith's album many years ago, and Jason played it, and Ronnie loved these two together. So we come up with, you know, this fantasy bluegrass team for this song, and then we'll say, Jason, can you come up and record the song? And Jason would say, sure. Adam Steffi, would you come in and do this? It was a lot of fun.
Well, and it shows. How many tunes? If there's 17 on this, and by the way, you had James King sing on one of these tunes, and he's since passed on, but it's a wonderful song that he does. How many songs did you record before you pared it down to this 17?
We have maybe at four other songs we started.
Okay.
Three. I take it down. Take it back. Three songs. And somehow we finished the other 17 first, or one tune just did not work out, so we had to scratch it. And one song I lost tape.
Oh, okay.
We don't go there.
Okay. Just forget about that one. It'll show up in somebody's basement someday, and they can bring it.
Yes, someday maybe pizza guy will find it.
The pizza tape. And Tony Rice is on this album. That was a good segue. Tony's on this.
Oh, yes.
Everybody's on this thing. That was a good segue. People are going to have to figure that out when they finish listening. Yeah, pizza tapes, and then there's Tony. Good one. And Grisman's on it too, so that's all clever.
Yeah. Wyatt Rice did a great job on Reason for Being.
Yeah.
The song that Fred Travers sings.
Oh, there's so many. There's so many great, and we're touching on them as we go. We want to get the feel of the album and the dedication and what your spirit was to get this done. And so we're mentioning, as we come up with them, all these different great players. I want to ask you, I want to go back to the duck one more time as to the 2 points. Did Duffy ever tell you why he made the duck that way? Was it sound? Was it just something he wanted to have a different appearance?
Oh, boy. I never did ask where the design came from.
Okay.
But I heard that Jimmy Goodrow and John got together one day and put sand into this point, and it made it sound really bad. So I think the instrument...
I can agree that, probably with not having to do it. But so now they have a bad-sounding thing, so then the duck comes out of where?
I think, like, when you look at the violin, it has wider place and narrower place. So instrument has to have, you know, wide range of tone, what do you call it? Overtone has to be created.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why John made these 2 points instead of just making a round mandolin.
Well, it worked well. But you wrote a song for this. The very last song, number 17, is an instrumental. And I want you to tell the people listening, we're talking to Akira Otsuka about his great journey with John Duffy's music and bringing it back alive in the epilogue. Not that it's dead, but the epilogue tribute to John Duffy on Smithsonian Folkways. The last tune is yours. It's an instrumental. And what is it made you do that?
Ronnie and I discussed, then he passed away, and I just went ahead and put it on. First here is something I wrote 7, 8 years ago, and I made it as a pedal tune of my solo CD. And the more I thought about it, I said, I want some people to hear the mandolin by itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you have four instruments, you only get 1/4. If you have trio singing, that's 1/7
mm-hmm.
of mandolin you get to hear. And I just wanted to show how good that mandolin Gibson F12 sounded.
It does. It does. Listen, are you... here's something I learned between the time we set this up and before we're doing it. I've been affiliated with Gray Fox Bluegrass Festival for, 5 or 6 years. Am I correct mm-hmm. that you're going to be at Gray Fox this year?
Yes. I think it is going to happen.
Okay.
I have been teaching mandolin to kids in 15, maybe 13 years or so. Mary Burdett mm-hmm. of Gray Fox and I had been talking about doing a workshop at Gray Fox this summer, in July, and talk about this album.
Yeah.
So that should be fun, and hopefully one or two guests who appeared on the CD will show up and talk about the album a little bit.
All right, good enough. Well, I hope to see you up there because I think they bring me back and have me, whatever they want me to do, I do. It's usually radio-related. Is there a website where they can go and find out about this fine epilogue tribute to John Duffy?
Smithsonian Folkways has a website.
Okay.
And if you are interested in, you can go there and you can sample 4 songs. And also you can download the booklet we have been talking about.
Oh, cool.
For free.
Oh, that'll make them buy it. That's almost like one of those sales pitch things.
Yes. And the CD will be available next week, June 22nd.
Okay. It's a wonderful CD, and every, like I said, you need them both. You need to have the book and the music because you want to read. If you're like you and you're like me, we talked about this off the air. You want all that information, and you've got it all in there. You've got descriptions of different people writing about the concept. You and Katie Daly and Dudley, I think, all contribute different writings about it, and then all the information for each song and who's doing what. It's wonderful for old guys like us. It's a pretty cool thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, I used to enjoy reading the back of LP.
Yeah.
And learned who played what, and hey. This bass sounds really good. Who is it? I was interested in that.
Yeah, and then you go find something else that person is on because you figure they're good, and if they're playing with somebody else, they might be good.
Exactly.
That's how it worked. All right, man, this has been a blast. Thanks so much for your time, Akira Otsuka. And I just enjoyed it. Enjoyed Bluegrass 45 and everything you did with that. And I know you had a good time in Raleigh last year on the anniversary of the mm-hmm. – absolutely tore up the place down there too, and then you were there when Rocky Top, the 50th anniversary of Rocky Top, came about.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you.
Had a great time talking to
you. Well, thank you so much. You're very kind, and we'll catch up down the road.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you.